Welcome to the Lean Commerce Podcast, the show that sheds light on hidden levers that can help you 10x your business. Join us as we talk to experts and find out the 1% improvements that you can apply right now to take you there.
Hey, everybody. Today we are here with Charles Pileski from Spark Shipping. He's the CEO over there, and we are thrilled to have him on the show. Welcome, Charles.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on.
So, Charles, you've got one of the more interesting paths that you took to get to where you are today. Now you're running a SaaS company, but can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in e-commerce?
Sure. So today I'm the founder of Spark Shipping, where we work with e-commerce retailers and help them automate their e-commerce business. But going back quite a few years ago, I was doing some freelance consulting, building some different web apps, that sort of thing. I have a development background. Somewhere along the way, and I did that for, you know, quite a few years, but somewhere along the way, I decided, quite honestly, almost out of the blue, that I should buy an e-commerce site. So I went on and there was very little, the story doesn't quite fit on that one, but it kind of makes this jump of, I'm going to try this. So I decided, looked around for a bit, found a site that sold popcorn machines and other carnival type accessories. Quite honestly, purchased that, ran that for a while. I was working with about, I think, five different manufacturers of popcorn machines. Did mostly drop shipping, did some FBA, pulled some stock internally, did some different things like that. But a lot of working with different vendors type of thing. And somewhere along the way, I started writing this tool. At the time, it was just like the automation tool to kind of help automate that business. There were every day we get inventory feeds from these different vendors. We would get orders. We'd have to send them to them. They would send tracking data back. And it was always kind of this confusing thing on, you know, an order comes in and I had a couple folks helped me at the time. And, you know, hey, what products are in this order? And, oh, okay. Which vendors are those for? We did this thing with like a SKU prefix, but then once in a while, there'd be some issues with that. And there was all this like stuff. So we kind of automated that. And I ran that for a while and kind of built it up through that. And at some point I decided, okay, this is actually kind of neat, this tool. Let's just put it out there and, you know, see if other folks are interested. And yeah, I put it out there, named it Spark Shipping. And at some point that kind of became, you know, the main focus. And it was probably about 3+ years ago now where that actually became, you know, what we do. Ended up selling the e-commerce site itself and have been running Spark Shipping ever since.
So that popcorn business has changed ownership a couple times now. It's still going strong, I imagine.
I think it's still, I actually looked a few weeks ago and it's still there. So it's still selling popcorn machines. Yeah. Under my watch, we upgraded it from Yahoo stores to Magento 1.something. So just to date myself a little bit, but yeah, I think it's still using Magento actually. So at least that'll go for a while.
I think you get the prize for like the most unique niche that of anybody I've interviewed that has started on.
Oh, popcorn machines. Yeah, that, and people asked, oh, did you really like popcorn? I'm like, no, thought popcorn. was that like a boyhood dream? I'm like, no, that wasn't a thing. I think I just wanted to like learn about e-commerce and I kind of saw a lot of folks doing it and kind of wanted to know more. And, you know, it was a lot easier to get a start buying a small existing business than, you know, answer some of those questions on how do you find manufacturers? How do you build a relationship with them? Like, what do you even do? So kind of getting something that was already moving, you know, it wasn't starting from ground zero and literally like creating a new store and adding products for the first time. It was more finding something that's moving along at least a little bit and then just jumping into that and trying to improve what's already there and not just start from the ground up.
Yeah, I totally agree with that model. I know when we chatted before that, you know, my idea of acquiring, I got one business that runs okay. And I said, well, it's time to acquire another one. And some people wonder why, if you start one business and it works, why wouldn't you want to start another business? And I think the answer is because it's really darn hard. And there's just that 0 to 1 is a lot more difficult than getting from 1 to 2, right? So from 0 to your first sale, there's a ton of things that have to come together. And you don't even know if the market wants the thing that you think they want. But then, you know, when you already know that people want it, scaling up or just optimizing some basic things on the back end, like, can go a long way. So
yeah,
makes total sense.
Yeah, it's one of those things that like 0 to 1, it's it's a lot. That first sale, you're doing a lot of work to get like actually one sale, anywhere from just setting up a site, talking to manufacturers, getting those accounts all set up, getting all that done. There's a lot of upfront work, and just being able to say, okay, if you have a little money just to purchase something that some of that groundwork's already been done for you, you can jump, you know, a month, several months into the future just based on, you know, hey, here's a little money. And if it doesn't work out, you can resell it. You could resell for more, you know, it does work out. So it's not like a, you know, just taking this money and throwing it away. If you buy something that makes sense, and you do a little research, it is an asset that you could resell at some point in the future, which I did.
That's a great point. Now, I was really excited to get you on the show because I don't think we talk enough about the back-end processes that are so critical to run an e-commerce business. And I mean, I put myself in that category when I talk to clients, and you know, we're almost always focusing on some kind of sales optimization, right? Whether it's checkout optimization or, you know, products or whatever it's going to look like, we're probably focusing on sales and marketing. But I mean, the truth is it doesn't work without a back end to run things. So with Spark Shipping, can you just give me a rundown of what Spark Shipping does? Because I didn't quite understand it the first time and don't know if I remember it perfectly.
Yeah, so we basically sit in between two parties, two general parties. We consider one side the retail side, which could be a shopping cart, a marketplace like Amazon, eBay, that sort of thing. And the other side, a vendor being wholesale, manufacturer, dropshipper, distributor, 3PL, pretty much any place inventory is stored or orders are shipped from, we call very just generically a vendor. So between those two, we automate three main things. From the vendor, we get inventory quantities, update the retail side. From the retail side, we get orders, send the order fulfillment request to the vendors. And then from the vendor, we get tracking data, send that back up to the retail side, which in turn notifies the end user. So we kind of automate that day-to-day round trip. And kind of the big thing here is, you know, although there's a standard API for Shopify, BigCommerce, Magento, Amazon, every vendor does something different. So we have, you know, quite a few pre-built integrations. We have these WYSIWYG tools people quite literally built thousands of integrations off of at this point. And, you know, the thing about that is every vendor, even if you're just talking CSVs alone, there's still, we've seen thousands of configurations just on CSVs, just on different columns, different, is it FTP, is it SFTP, is it HTTP, just different transmission protocols. It's every vendor does stuff differently. So if you're working with three vendors, you're going to have three different inventory formats, three different order formats, three different tracking formats. And being able to break apart orders and then pull them back together in all these different formats is kind of our big thing.
So it sounds like very similar to like a Zapier, but for pretty specific situations, right? Like Zapier can integrate these things in the same way and have the ability to do, I guess, all the inventory components that you're going to need.
Yeah, it's basically Zapier, but very specifically for e-commerce. So in addition to things like EDI, specific format used by a lot of larger e-commerce vendors, we can do that. Specific APIs. And some of these aren't APIs like these, you know, newfangled JSON APIs, that sort of thing. Some of these are written in 1990. They've been, you know, these vendors spent quite a lot of money on them, probably the early 90s, but they're going to keep using them. And if you come as a retailer and say, hey, we could do this new, you know, REST API, they're going to say, no, stop. Like, we, you know, we spent X amount on this in 1990. This is how we do it. You can do it our way or take your business elsewhere because, you know, we're this gigantic vendor and we're not going to change. So it's up to the retailer basically to say, okay, we have to figure out a way to make this work. And that's where we come in.
Got it. That makes total sense. Now, when you have folks use the system, you were talking about some pretty interesting use cases. Can you go through that hybrid dropshipping model and tell us a little bit about how it works?
Yeah, so that's something that we see. It's funny, we saw a lot of folks doing it. And I did a little with the PubCon business, but it's not really talked about. So I started kind of writing and chatting about it a little bit just because it's just odd. Not a lot of folks talk about the boring back end of e-commerce on the actual, you know, processing data side. That's, like you said, more on the sales side. So that whole concept is called hybrid dropshipping. It's one particular product, and this works. It's very common we're seeing, but even more on distributed type models, like automotive, for instance, where you can get the same part from multiple distributors. But basically, when you can fulfill the same item for multiple vendors, we see this kind of hybrid approach. And a multiple vendors could be a manufacturer, it could also be a distributor, or it could also be your internal 3PL that you're using, and it could also be your internal warehouse. So what we see a lot of folks doing is having layers of inventory of saying, hey, you know, when I get a return, I bring it to my local warehouse. And warehouse, you know, sometimes it's a large warehouse, forklifts driving around, but other times it's a, you know, air quotes, warehouse, where it's like the garage, basically. But there's local inventory stored somewhere. And maybe when they see an order come in for that, they want to pick it out of there first. But if it's not there, they might actually have a, they can go direct to the manufacturer. They get one price. You know, obviously they want to go to themselves first, but the manufacturer gives them a pretty good price. Once in a while, it's not even there, so they can't get either of those. Then there's a distributor network, quite possibly, where they can, but it's a worse price. So one thing we do is work with users who have this kind of layered approach to inventory. When an order comes in, we can look at, hey, here's five different locations we can fulfill this from. Out of those, who even has enough stock? So if the order is for 5 units, who has at least 5 in stock? Okay, knock out, you know, 1 or 2 of them. Out of those remaining, let's say 3 vendors, who has the cheapest unit cost? Maybe it's a manufacturer, maybe they don't have it in stock at the time, but whoever that is, let's fulfill it with them. So we're able to look at one product, but realize one product equals different products to different vendors and do that translation, split apart the order, send it to whoever has the cheapest, and then pull it back in and reassemble the tracking on the other end.
Wow. So basically, instead of saying it always is going to go, instead of writing such hard and fast rules like, hey, it goes from Amazon first, or, you know, whatever your 3PL is, or wherever, you know, if you have one warehouse, you're not stuck there. You can actually use all 3 of your warehouses to try to send it from the most efficient place.
Yeah. And a warehouse could be, like we said, you know, let's say what a lot of people do is they might have a manufacturer to get products from, but let's say it's a really hot seller. They bring them into FBA, just to use a 3PL, for example, obviously a very popular one. So they have their FBA products, but once in a while they get a return and they figure out, okay, you know what, instead of sending the return back to FBA, there's some cost there, or back to the manufacturer, there's some cost there. Why don't they just send it locally? So they might have, you know, some super popular product they're selling sitting right in their office in a corner, there's a little stack of 10 of them. They also have some in FBA. They also have some they could just get right from the manufacturer. When an order comes in, depending where the stock is, they might want to route it to a different place. So maybe it's their ShipStation account, maybe it's FBA, or maybe it's back to the manufacturer. But that allows the retailer to have products in stock more often, because they're not just using, you know, going direct to manufacturer for everything or their own stock for everything. They can basically have it in stock just a higher percentage of time at that point.
Makes sense. Man, I think one of those back-end optimizations that I wouldn't have thought of until you mentioned it, but it makes complete sense once you talk about it, right? Send it from the most efficient place.
And now, it allows you to actually optimize your returns too. That's the other thing on, you know, you're not just taking your returns and sending them back, and there's restock. If you're doing drop shipping, there's restocking fees and, you know, who knows, all sorts of different things. It allows you to actually, you know, save all of that and just say, you know what, we'll bring these in, but we can still like intercept the orders and bring them into our, we do a ton with ShipStation, for example. They go to their ShipStation account and they say, oh, we have 5 orders in ShipStation today. Send, send, send. Those all go out. And then once they're all gone, then they keep going to the manufacturer. So you can even just use it just even for your returns, that sort of thing.
Now, you probably have seen quite a few back-end shipping problems and had to work through some of those weird situations that only come up, you know, like reality is stranger than fiction. They only come up when you actually start trying things. So if you were going to have to point at one major improvement that most e-commerce businesses could make in their shipping or returns, you know, any ideas on what that would be?
I mean, even before that, something we see that's is still surprisingly not common, just surprisingly people aren't doing it, is even just getting, they're doing drop shipping, but don't even have uptake inventory quantities. A lot of drop shippers are listing products, but they don't even have live quantities from vendors. And a lot of vendors will provide this, some even in real time. And it's always surprising the number of folks that we say, oh, what are you doing now? And they say, you know, once a quarter, we get the CSV and we update it. You say, once a quarter? And they're like, yeah, once a quarter. And, you know, what do you do for out of stocks? And they're like, well, we just email them. And it's always surprising, like, you know, sitting here 2018, 2000, almost 2019, how often, you know, people still aren't like parsing those data. And I get it, right? Because if you have thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of products, you can't just do this on your own, and you clearly can't do it manually. But a lot of folks still aren't using any solution for that, which is always surprising to me.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And it's such a lousy customer experience to get the email. You know, you thought there were 19 units in stock, and you get an email that says, sorry, you know, it's the end of the quarter. We were actually out of stock and didn't know it. Can't fulfill your order for another 6 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You also, you know, you're right. We're almost into 2019. And there's been a lot of noise about a couple different trends. Some people are nuts about chatbots. Some people are nuts about Facebook starting to just crack down. I saw some of the, and not even crack down in the sense that making the standards tougher, but you know, they started asking folks to submit only one site for a new ad account instead of having multiple sites. And you start off with a $400 per day limit, which, you know, isn't really anything. But what do you see as some of the trends that e-commerce folks should be thinking about in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, just over the years, the competition just keeps getting tougher. And it's one of those things, it still works, you can still do it. You just need to up your game. So if you're looking at stuff from, you know, a lot of folks are looking at these guides just kind of starting off from years ago and realizing, oh, if I just, you know, throw some products on Amazon or Shopify, and, you know, I go off to a distributor and just relist their products, run Facebook ads to them, I'll win. And then you start realizing, like, we're beyond that. It's almost 2019. You need to have something unique, or at least a unique spin, or at least a unique take to actually attract people in. And just blasting a bunch of Facebook ads off to a site just isn't cutting anymore. And this is just kind of high level what I'm seeing, just kind of who's winning and who's not. And it's just the people going out there trying to just basically, like, not add value. We see kind of falling, you know, falling off very quickly nowadays. Before, you could go out there and really, quite honestly, not add much value. You're basically just reselling stuff that's already been resold. And there was actually a market for that. And it worked for a while, but it's kind of not working anymore, where I don't think it's worked for a while at this point. On, you can just go out there, slap some products on, you know, let's say a Shopify site, and run some, you know, like you said, run $100 a day Facebook ads to it and make money. It just seems like that model's not working anymore.
Yeah, I think I just always think of it like a convenience store, right? Where you had almost this attention arbitrage, where the only way that model works is because you don't have any kind of exclusive arrangement. You don't do any particular bundles. You don't offer good shipping time. The only thing that you offer is that it's convenient, right? Like, they didn't have to look for their, what's a good random dropshipping product? Eyelash extensions. You don't have to look for them. They show up in your Facebook feed, and you can go and buy it from a, you know, somewhat questionable store, but hey, everything on the internet's safe anyway, so we'll go there. And that model just, I mean, even if you just take a couple steps, right, and you maybe offer a special bundle, or you offer better shipping times just by having, you can even talk to different distributors, or like you said, optimizing with some kind of hybrid model, some kind of value add that makes it so it's worth it to buy from you rather than going on Amazon, or even just not buying, right? You add something good enough that they think it's a deal that they're going to take you up on.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, and we see a lot of customers do it, is once you're deep inside a given niche, you can start giving value based on that very specific thing. So just in your product offering itself, in your categories, the products you actually show, that in itself is value, right? Where, you know, you can go to Amazon and there's one of a billion products or whatever the number is, and they're all over the place. It's obviously everything you could possibly think of. But let's say you want to get very specifically camera tripods, just making up an item. And you want to know which one of these does best for travel, which one of these is best for a studio, which one of these does best in all weather, you know, that sort of thing. Just having, you know, mytripods.com, and it's every possible tripod, and you look down and you can see, rate, you know, what does best in this category? Who's this one good for? If you're doing studio work versus travel, and breaking up in those different ways, that in itself adds value. And that's one of those things, you know, if you're targeting photographers, and then you can say, come in here, what type of photographer are you? And kind of niche down. You might need to work with more vendors to do that, or more, you know, distributors, basically just more folks to be able to get a wider array of products that are all in that same niche though. Because what you don't want to do is go to one vendor and say, let's just take your entire catalog, dump it onto a store and just try to resell your catalog. What you really want is a curated list of products and say, okay, from this vendor, we only want these particular SKUs because they fit in with our niche. From vendor B, we have these particular SKUs. And you might have to string together, you know, quite a few of these different vendors because you're only using very specific products because they fit into your niche. And that's one way, even with dropshipping, you're still adding a lot of value because you're doing that kind of curation ahead of time for folks, and they don't have to go to Amazon and wade through, you know, thousands of products and say, okay, well, you know, plan on traveling a lot, which one's the lightest tripod, but I also needed to do this and kind of do that. Just be, you know, having a good product selection allows folks to just do that on your site. And that is one thing that even if you're just dropshipping, you could still add a ton of value.
That's a great point. And I think we see some of the folks that have Amazon affiliate sites doing this where they are basically doing the review for you, right? Here's the relevant reviews. Here's why you should look at this product. Because with just the explosion of options, I don't know if this happens to you, but sometimes I go on Amazon, I'm looking for something specific. I don't know. I wanted a chaplet of St. Michael. It's like some prayer beads. And there's just too many options, right? Or I needed a cross. There's way too many options. And I don't even know how to qualify some of the things. You just get overwhelmed by the sheer search. And so having somebody say, look, man, just buy this one. It's the best one for, you know, guys age 29. Perfect. I'm buying it. I'm done.
Yeah. And you might just want to see, here's like the, you know, gold, silver, bronze, that sort of thing. And okay, I want the second, I don't want the top one. That's too much. I want the second best one. I can handle that. But sometimes it's Amazon, you're literally looking through like something like that. There might be 100 of them or even more. And then you're like, is this the cheap one? You have to look at the reviews. It just takes a lot of like work. And you might really just want to say, okay, let's just pick, okay, it's the best. It's also, you know, most durable, whatever, longest lasting. Fine, let's go with that. So it helps just making the selection easy for people is something that helps.
Yeah. So speaking of drop shipping, there's with the whole potential for the China shipping rates, the e-packet components ending, then a lot of folks are worried or skeptical about whether or not drop shipping is going to continue. So you obviously work with a whole ton of business, big and small. How, you know, do you have drop shippers on your platform that are doing significant volume, or is it really an intermediate step for everybody as they get to being exclusive or manufacturers themselves?
So we see people go in both directions that move from drop shipping to manufacturing, but also from manufacturing to drop shipping. Like it's usually, and here's the thing, it's not like this like religious war of it has to be all or none. And there's like, and I think everyone takes it as this like black and white, like you have to do it this way. And that's like, that's it. It's usually this much more like holistic approach on, let's say you're manufacturing a particular product, makes complete sense. You're pulling them in, you're doing a ton of volume, but there's a lot of accessories and it doesn't make sense to manufacture all these accessories. So you could just take those, you know, additional sales, those kind of upcart sales and say, you know, I don't know, go to Amazon or just go buy them from someone else, whatever. Or you could say, you know what, it doesn't make sense to manufacture all of these. Might not even make sense to stock all of these. So let's say you're selling, you know, you make a camera. I happen to have a camera and a tripod in front of me. So as you see my examples, but let's say you're making a camera. That's what you're selling. You're manufacturing these, but it doesn't make sense for you to stock every memory card and every tripod and every, you know, strap and camera bag and that sort of thing. We see a lot of folks drop shipping a lot of the accessory items and stocking some of their main items. Or even what folks do too is they might be a clothing retailer and they might be stocking the large, medium, small, but extra large, extra, extra large, extra small, that sort of thing. That might go back to the manufacturer. Things like that we see are super common too. And all part of that kind of hybrid approach where it's not an all or none. So a lot of folks are bringing in their best sellers, but then also still drop shipping. So they have the breadth of products as well. We see that quite often too, in like the parts niche, right? The auto parts, anything like that, where you probably have specific SKUs that they sell very well. You know, there's what I'm trying to think of a popular car nowadays, but a popular car that, you know, you can just sell this particular, you know, headlight or whatever it is all day long. But the headlight to the, you know, 87 Chevy, not a lot of folks are buying that. But with dropshipping, you could still list that. So you could be selling, you know, stocking your main products, selling those internally, but also saying, hey, if you happen to have this other car on the side, you can still buy that. It'll be slightly longer shipping times, or maybe they get a worse margin on it, but at least they can still offer it. So we see a lot of folks doing that blended approach, and it's not like an all or none, which I think is, a lot of people think you move from one to the other, and then you just like become, you know, I went from being a dropshipper to a manufacturer or vice versa. But it's more of this blended, holistic thing we see.
And honestly, I think e-commerce is a lot about aggregating demand rather than being the best manufacturer. And obviously, if you can be a great manufacturer, or you know, you say, hey, we have good manufacturing partners, that can be a competitive advantage. But the customer doesn't care if you make it or not at the end of the day. They care if you can ship it fast, and they care if it is a good product for a good price. So what happens on the back end, right? They don't, Spark shipping is a critical step for it, but they don't know. And they're pretty flexible on whatever shipping thing you use.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of large companies that do this. We work with a lot of companies that you wouldn't even necessarily know, but a lot of times you place an order with, you know, XYZ large company, you get your main product, and then a day later, you get a second box that looks completely different with the other product that you ordered from them. They're probably doing this. It's more common than I think most folks think of just, you know, you're not fulfilling, you might have your main items, but there's a lot of accessories that just make sense to go to manufacturers. We'll even see people that they purchase, I don't know how often people even talk about this, but they purchase products from manufacturers, but don't ever actually move them, if that makes sense. So they're like buying them, but they're just leaving them there. And yeah, this is actually really common too, because anything, if you think about it, it's heavy, bulky shipping rates, does it really make sense to ship it across the U.S. to just ship it possibly back across the U.S. again? So a lot of manufacturers will say, you know, buy it ahead of time, you get your bulk rates, and we'll charge you for storage. So they get to, you know, sell you in bulk, charge you to store it there every month. But the benefit is it might make sense not to ship it and then ship it back. So you're basically drop shipping with the manufacturer, but using this as your 3PL at that point. If you already bought it, you got a bulk rate. And we see, and this is again, one of these things that's not really like talked about, but just from looking at like a lot of different shapes and sizes of businesses, we do see stuff like that as well, which is kind of interesting.
That's pretty fascinating actually, because essentially the manufacturer is acting as a 3PL in this case.
Yeah, and a lot will do that because, well, they also charge you for it. So I mean, it's not completely altruistic purposes here, but they get to still sell you like they're a manufacturer, but then charge you monthly for storage and charge you even for like a pick and pack. So they basically, the money you'd be otherwise spending, you know, some with the manufacturer than some with the 3PL, they can just do both. And a lot of these folks already have, you know, several facilities across the US, so they can actually be a 3PL, which is kind of great too.
And you can probably save on shipping costs if it, like you said, a big bulky item that costs a ton to ship is much cheaper just to keep in storage with the manufacturer or the man 3PL or whatever they're going to be called, hybrid man.
Exactly. And we see large companies doing this because it does make sense just to save on shipping. Because that shipping at the end of the day, it's, you don't get to keep that. And you basically have to pass the cost on to your customer. So anything you can do just not to give them an additional cost that, and it's not like the shipping increased, it didn't do anything for them. It didn't make your product better. It's just waste, right? Of just moving stuff, shuffling stuff around, basically. So anything you can do to reduce that wasted cost, you can pass that right on to your customer, and it helps everyone.
Makes total sense. Well, now, if you're just going to look at the shipping of a lot of folks, any low-hanging fruit that a lot of folks can they could implement in their business and take a look at some section of their shipping costs that they often ignore?
So what a lot of people, depending on where you ship from, what a lot of people don't seem to know is the shipping rates you get from a carrier. And I'm by no means expert. I just kind of am able to see a lot of different things, I guess, from where we sit. But the shipping rates first you get from like a, you know, if you go onto like ups.com, FedEx.com, those are the posted shipping rates. people typically don't actually pay those unless you're like walking down to the UPS store type of thing. A lot of times, once you're doing any sort of volume, you can go to the carriers directly and negotiate a cost with them and say, we ship X amount per month. What sort of discounts can you give us? And those discounts are generally quite good compared to the posted, you know, public rates. So once you're doing any sort of numbers, just go to the carriers, start trying to negotiate some sort of terms with them. Once you're doing that, you can also go to your manufacturers and talk to them about the same terms. The manufacturers are also doing the exact same thing with the carriers. They might be getting better rates from you. They probably are, quite honestly, but then they tack a fee onto that. So then you have to kind of go there and say, okay, we're able to negotiate with our carrier. You negotiate with your carrier. You get a better rate, but then you charge us a different rate. And it's not actually transparent what rate they have and where the percentage is. So no one will really tell you that. But you have to try to triangulate it and say, does it make more sense? You as a retailer putting everything under your account, you trying to get the best rate possible, negotiate that down, or go to your different carriers, try to negotiate them down and do it that way. So just trying to think of some optimizations like that on, you know, just which account is going to pay for the shipping and knowing that the carrier does actually tack on, the manufacturer or vendor, whoever it is, 3PLs, they all tack on some sort of fee, but a lot of times it's very opaque on where is their fee, where is actually the carrier cost. Because the one thing, these negotiator rates, you're not allowed to disclose to anyone, really. It's like, it's one of those things, once you get them, you get this little packet, and the first thing is, you cannot tell anyone these rates. So it's not something you can just like post online or say, hey, we're getting, you know, X percent. So you can't actually tell anyone what your rates are. You can just say, I have negotiated rates, but you can't tell anyone what those specific rates are because they negotiate with everyone. So you'll never know what the carriers are paying. They'll never know what you're paying. You can just kind of start estimating and see, you know, does it make more sense just strategy-wise using all my carriers? Hopefully they give you decent fees or going with your own account. And let's say you're selling from 5 different vendors. Aggregate that and have them use your, I think it's called a third-party billing ID. I think UPS calls it that. They all have a version of this where they basically, instead of billing to their account, their carrier account, and then charging you on an invoice, they basically just put in your shipping or your billing ID when they're generating the postage. It appears under your carrier account, and they just charge you for the product. So essentially, the carrier charges you for shipping, or do they charge? What does the vendor charge you for both shipping and the product, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess it'd probably be a function of who has the best rate, or who has the best rate plus the fee, since the vendor is going to charge you the fee. And you go, well, maybe if the vendor does so much volume that their rates are ridiculously low, they could get much better negotiated rates than we can, then sure, it could make sense. Or if it's like, we have pretty high volume and negotiated the rates down relatively low, then just putting it on your account would probably be the most logical step.
Exactly. And if you're working with multiple vendors, then it's kind of this matrix of they're all going to have different costs. Some are going to be doing more, some are doing less. Does it make sense to bring all 5 onto your account or use all 5 of their accounts? So just figuring out some numbers like that, it's one of those things where like those even, some of these are single digit percentages, but that can be like a decent piece of your margin right there, saying let's add an extra 5%. And if, you know, once you're doing decent numbers per month, that actually moves a needle, that little 4 or 5%. So,
oh yeah. On the conversion, on the CRO side. So if we're optimizing conversions, and a 5% change is a solid win, right? It's not amazing, but it's a definite win. If you can optimize on the back end side, I think it's even more durable than an optimization on the front end. There's just this like regression to the mean that seems to happen with front end conversions. But, you know, well, and it's not, you change your prices, that's pretty permanent.
And it's not as competitive. Like, it's not something that's, it's just like this extra like cost kind of like baked into it. So like changing your like ad conversion rate, it's super competitive, it's cutthroat, but just kind of squeaking out some extra little carrier fees over here, it's something people just ignore. So I feel like it's a kind of the boring backend stuff is a lot of times easier just because it's ignored. So there's not as many eyeballs trying to do that part of, optimize that part of the system.
I think you're totally right. And I've really been asking myself, so I studied engineering in college and I really just liked some of the boring backends because they can move the needle in a big way, but and they're problems that have right answers, right? So, you know, you throw out a new split test and you're not really sure if it's going to work. You decrease your shipping cost by 5%. You know, you decreased your shipping cost by 5%. And, you know, it's just a little bit, you don't run it for 30 days to see if it did actually change. You know, when you walk out of the negotiations, whether or not it changed.
And you can just pull up that data and, like you said, pump everything into a spreadsheet and just sit down and look at everything very objectively and saying, what strategy, you know, do we want to go all in this way, all in that way, that sort of thing. And then let's just go and let's do it. And they tend to last, these optimizations tend to last a bit longer too, versus, you know, some of these split tests you have to constantly be testing because the assumption you made in July isn't going to be the same as December all of a sudden, you know, just things change. But some of these, you know, optimizations on what carrier to use, what's about shipping rates, like you said, they're a lot more durable and you don't have to constantly go back and revisit them. And when you do, you're just comparing the same numbers again. So it's basically just plugging in. It's the same boring, you know, plugging in this formula. It's not this fun, you know, salesy type stuff on we're going to up your conversion rate, but it's a lot of just, hey, we're going to sit down in Excel and just kind of crunch these numbers and just squeak out an extra few percent, which again, you're not going to go and brag to anyone about, and everyone's going to say, wow, you just, you know, squeeze an extra 2% gross profit, but it actually really makes a big, but those are things that actually you should be bragging about, but nobody does. It's kind of just like, oh, I'd rather, you know, put out an article on how to sell X amount of, you know, $100,000 of a product using Facebook ads in the first hour. And everyone will talk about that, but how to squeeze out an extra couple percent on your shipping rates. Nobody talks about that, but it's really a good thing to optimize.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So any other backend areas that just that might even be outside of shipping, but you think are often overlooked? Because this has just been a question that I've been trying to answer too, of what areas that should I be working more with on my clients and instead of just sticking to kind of the sexy front end stuff?
I mean, a lot of folks we see are, because every vendor is using different format, they're hesitant to bring on different vendors that might be able to increase their upsells and just kind of breadth of products. So they might have some product that has some really nice accessories they could sell very, you know, they know they could upsell them, cross-sell them, that sort of thing, but they might be resistant to bringing it on just because getting those vendors, the orders, the tracking data, it's just totally different. We see a lot of people with even now, some vendors actually have like direct like Shopify apps, that sort of thing, where they use that vendor, not because it's right, but because it's easy. Which is fine, because if you're just starting off, you know, honestly, just easy route, just, you know, get it out there, get some orders. But once you actually say, okay, now let's start, you know, implementing cross sells and just realizing you have a different vendor that you could list more products on and pull in some extra data that way really helps out and be able to actually offer a wider selection. That starts to move the needle. So I would say, you know, once you're out there and you want to start doing some things like that, that's probably the time you start looking at a product like Spark Shipping of saying, hey, you know, we want to work with these vendors, but they have this bizarre API that no one ever heard of and no one can work with. But the neat part of those vendors, most people haven't heard of them and their product's usually pretty unique. So those vendors with those quirky formats that are kind of in the odd corners of the internet, they usually get you some of the best products just because they're not the, you know, top 100 that everyone's using, that everyone has the same products and everyone's trying to resell them. They're usually the quirky ones. But that's usually when you come to someone like us and say, okay, I have these really unique vendors. I want to pull in all these weird formats that, you know, they don't have some easy plug and play method. Can you help me? So I would say once you're there, don't shy away from those just because of that reason, because that's usually the ones you should kind of lean into and say they're weird, they had to work with, but those are the vendors because not a lot of folks are working with them. So we get probably better prices, better selection, and just some unique products that not everyone has.
I know sourcing isn't your main thing, but any tips on finding those weird vendors?
Yeah. I mean, once you're in a particular niche, it actually gets easier of saying, you know, what is for sale out there? And just once you're digging down to a niche, you start to say, oh, this weird company in, you know, Colorado that sells this little like clip-on accessory, that sort of thing. You can start digging into like very specific things like that. Usually niche selection is the hardest when you're saying, hey, we want to sell where it's completely like broad thing. You're just basically looking for, I need products. Once you do that, it's pretty much just pick anyone. Who cares? You know, it's just like, you're usually using that like low tier vendor. But once you kind of get very select, you can start going after very targeted vendors. And the other thing with that, kind of learned through the PubCon site, is if you're going at those like first tier vendors, those like entry level ones, they sign up everyone, you get the worst prices. Once you start to, not gonna sugarcoat it. Basically, you go on and say, hey, I have an e-commerce site. They say, great, you can resell for us. You if that's a negotiation, you're probably not getting the best price. I'll just tell you that one. But once you go and say, hey, I have an e-commerce site, I want to resell your product, and they go, no, you go, okay, this is someone I want to work with. So usually those, because those are the ones, it took us years to get those relationships. But the neat part about that is not everyone had them because they were just turning away people. So those were really the ones where we saw other people selling their products, but not a lot of people. And we went to them, and initially they said no. But then over time we said, hey, we're coming back. Look at our catalog. Here's what we're doing a month. And they started to say, okay, that's you, you're someone we want to work with. Or maybe we don't necessarily take on that many internet retailers, but we want to work with you. So it's usually just once you kind of like graduate to going to the vendors that not a lot of folks have access to is where you start getting, in dropship at least, better margins, just more unique products. And you're not just taking products and dumping the same product on Amazon and you look into the buy box and there's, you know, 37 people selling the exact same product for below the, they're selling it on Amazon for below the cost you can buy it for. And you realize, oh, what's going on there? But once you start working with these unique vendors, they might even have map policies that are like tightly enforced. So you can actually be competitive and you're one of like four people selling them on the internet. So it's basically just niche down. And then once you do, you can actually start going after like very particular manufacturers and they'll start wanting to talk to you because you're in that niche, because you do that one specific thing as well.
That's a good little summary of it. And I do think that, you know, where there's a wall, right there, drop shipping with its little explosion of say AliExpress or, you know, even Alibaba is super easy, but then AliExpress is even easier. It just the, but the number of people selling the exact same product, that it's a pure arbitrage from AliExpress to Amazon or AliExpress to a Shopify site. It just kind of loses its value versus the folks that aren't going to be, they don't really want to have anybody else on there unless they're the right partner. It's a little bit of a moat that you have built in for, you know, it's more durable than say a new product.
Yeah. Well, and when I'm talking about dropshipping, we're typically looking at folks that are doing kind of domestic dropshipping, let's call it. And this is domestic to you, not just domestic. You know, if you're in Australia, it's using an Australian vendor, that sort of thing. But when you're looking at doing this kind of like overseas dropshipping with AliExpress, like you said, then you're talking about these long shipping times. You know, different product quality that maybe it's, you're going from a different factory time to time, it gets even more complex. So even just starting off with, just look at a domestic manufacturer, then at least you know the products seem to be typically about the same shipping times, about the same quality. You can get a couple, sample them, and you know, everything will be about the same and everything's very consistent. Once you start doing kind of the AliExpress drop shipping, then you're in a whole different ballgame of saying, who knows, they might show up in 3 weeks. And again, 2018, 2019, people aren't used to saying, hey, you know, you have hit buy now. And you'll see this product at your door 3 weeks from now. after the holidays, you can enjoy it. And like, but I wanted it for the holidays. And you say, no, you're getting it in January. Good luck. So people just aren't used to that. So, you know, when I'm talking about dropshipping, it's always kind of domestic, at least, just because I don't know that I feel like if you can be, it's even harder to be competitive doing that. Cause then you're not competitive with shipping times. You're not even competitive with the quality of the products. You're literally, like you said, just doing arbitrage and hoping to make some money in between, which you might be able to, but trying to grow beyond that, you know, it's going to be whack-a-mole, right? Where you find a couple products that work and they work for, you know, weeks or months, but the more you find, there's going to be ones dropping off on the other side. So you're always going to be trying to find more products that are working while others stop working. Once you start working and getting some more solid offerings, you can build and grow and not just play whack-a-mole.
Definitely. Well, Charles, it's been great having you on. If there are folks who are looking for a shipping integrator, then you know, how could they get in touch with you, or how could they find out more about Spark Shipping?
Yeah. So you can find us at nice and easy, sparkshipping.com. I also have a podcast called The Business of E-Commerce. You can find that at businessofecommerce.fm, where I kind of talk about all sorts of random e-commerce things. We just had actually hit our 1 year mark. So it's our anniversary today. Been doing it for a year. So either Spark Shipping or, episode 52 just came out. So it's a weekly podcast.
Very nice.
Yeah. Thank you. Either businessofecommerce.fm or sparkshipping.com.
Sounds great. Well, Charles, thanks so much for coming on. Been great chatting.
Good talking. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening. If you love the show, leave a review on iTunes. See you next time.